This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
So President Trump announces the other day that he has had communications with President Putin from Russia, and they are developing a framework for future communications and negotiations in order to end the war in Ukraine. And to the best of my knowledge and what I've been able to gather, I don't know whether or not there was any advance notice given to European leaders, our allies, and for that matter, neither President Zelensky in Ukraine. And here to talk about that and try to let us know what is going on there, Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst. Colonel, welcome to the show.
No, it's always a pleasure.
Colonel, I was kind of surprised by that announcement, and I hadn't been able to validate one way or the other whether or not there was any advance notice given to anyone else. Your thoughts?
There was not, to the best of my knowledge, any advance notice to our European allies or to the Ukrainians. And obviously this counters what had been a central tenet of the Biden administration's policy towards Ukraine since this war began now 3 years ago, which was nothing about Ukraine without Ukraine, that we would not negotiate over the head of the Ukrainians. And subsequently, of course, there was a meeting in Riyadh by the Secretary of State, National Security Advisor, and the Sergei Lavrov, who is the foreign minister of the Russian Federation, to talk about moving ahead. They agreed to appoint special teams for the negotiations. They agreed to expand the embassies in Moscow and Washington for the two sides, which had become somewhat morbid over the last several years. And then they spent a lot of time talking about future cooperation between Russia and the United States in future, diplomatically, economically, or whatever. So this sent shockwaves through our European allies, coupled with comments made by the vice president and by the secretary of defense prior to that at the Verkunde conference in Munich, which they suggested the United States would be standing down a large portion, if not all, of its military forces in Europe. And subsequently as well, the vice president kind of scolding the Europeans for what he called their failure to follow their particular democratic values, and no words by the SecDef or by the vice president criticizing Mr. Putin for not having a whole lot of democratic values, nor any criticism of him of the aggression against Ukraine.
So one of the things that kind of surprised me, too, are these sounded like concessions to me about territory and no NATO membership. Nope. Yes, Colonel, are you there?
We have a line problem.
Okay, let us do this. Let's go to a break, Coleman, and let's reconnect with Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst. We'll be right back, folks.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. and it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
All right, folks, we're back with Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst. Colonel, I apologize for the interruption. I was asking relative to what seemed to me to be concessions that were offered up immediately about territory concessions and no NATO membership to the Russians. It just seems to me that was kind of a weird approach for a negotiation.
Yeah, I would say so. Whether you're in favor of rapidly moving towards a bilateral negotiation with the United States and Russia or not, it would seem to me a negotiating tactic whereby you give away several major things even before the negotiations begin is just not a good tactic. And we did, in fact, do that in the president's words, as you described, saying that Ukraine would not become a member of NATO, saying that Ukraine would have to make territorial guarantees. The president went on from on that, said, you know, that Russia should be readmitted to the G7, even talked about reducing sanctions. So I think made some significant concessions up front. On the Russian side, so far, they've made absolutely zero concessions about anything. And in fact, they've served to reiterate what has been their longstanding position on the war for now for several years, and that is Ukraine can't go into NATO. The four provinces they claim are Russian must be recognized as Russian territory. Oh, by the way, they don't control all the territory of those four provinces. This required the Ukrainians to actually retreat from their current positions. The Zelensky government would have to go away, and they want a new government, obviously one that's much more amenable to Russian desires. Real limitations would be, have to be put on the Ukrainian army. Right now, the Ukrainian army is about 1 million men under arms. Russians propose that they be reduced to no more than 85,000 and further reductions in all their other armaments. And they went on to say that Ukraine has to accept and proclaim Russian as the official language of Ukraine and even change the names of some cities, towns, and streets that have been converted to Ukrainian and revert them back to the Russian language. And that has been consistently the Russian position. And even with these negotiations beginning, that hasn't changed.
Hasn't that been part of the problem with the sovereignty of Ukraine all along has been Russian intrusion?
Well, yeah, you can go back historically. I mean, when the Soviet Union was formed after the Russian Revolution, Ukraine declared its independence, and there was a civil war between the so-called whites and the reds. It went on for a number of years. Thousands of people were killed. The final agreement was signed in Sevastopol in Crimea, oh, by the way, ending that and formally incorporating Ukraine into the Soviet Union. Subsequently, of course, in 1956, we know that Nikita Khrushchev ceded a piece of territory to Ukraine, which included Crimea, because it had been moved to another province at one point or another. And that has always been a Russian contention that that was transferred, you know, illegally, or it was a poor agreement by Khrushchev. But the Russians, of course, did acknowledge the territorial integrity of Ukraine at the end of the Soviet Union, and furthermore acknowledged that in a thing called the Budapest Memorandum, signed between Ukraine, United States, United Kingdom, and Russia, respecting the sovereign territory of Ukraine when Ukraine transferred the nuclear weapons that were on their territory from the days of the Soviet Union back to the Russian Federation. But all those things now have been trampled upon following this invasion by Russia 3 years ago.
Well, how do you bring about a spirit of deterrence here if you make these territorial concessions to them and they don't suffer at all? I mean, and if you don't go back to returning Crimea and a vast majority of the Donbass region back to the Ukrainians, and the Russians walk away having all of that. I mean, I don't quite understand, how do you deter this from happening again in a decade from today?
Well, that's exactly right. And that's been one of the major concerns. I mean, Russians, from the Ukrainian perspective, invaded Ukraine in 2014. That's when they occupied the Crimea. That's when they began which is sort of a small civil war, and was the Donbass, supporting so-called rebels in the Donbass. There was a force put in under an agreement by the Organization for Security Cooperation in Europe during an armistice a number of years ago, but that has been violated repeatedly. And then, of course, the Russians invaded a second time in 2022. Now, there have been proposals that if, in fact, there is a ceasefire and a settlement, that some of the European countries, most notably the British and the French, have talked about bringing in peacekeepers. But peacekeepers, you have to talk about what is their mission and to what size. If they're there in small numbers, they're basically a tripwire. And as somebody said, I think rather eloquently, that's called bluff and prey. But if you put them in there at sufficient size to create a deterrent, as you're suggesting, well, then you're talking a couple hundred thousand troops, probably. And the British and the French, while saying they would be willing to do that, would not do so without what they call an American backstop. And it seems right now pretty clear to me that that backstop is not something that Trump administration wants to do. Furthermore, of course, if the United States is moving away, as it seems to be, from its overall commitments to the NATO alliance and to Article 5 and the security guarantees that we've provided Europe since the end of the Second World War, then that deterrence, many would argue, erodes further for Mr. Putin, not only conducting further aggression against Ukraine, but might he then consider aggression against one of the other countries of NATO, perhaps one of the small countries in the Baltic republics that support NATO, or Poland, sometime in the future.
When President Macron visited President Trump, it seemed that he was very insistent about these security guarantees. But other than peacekeepers, because you correct me if I'm wrong, in modern times, we've tried this several times. Has it really ever worked?
Well, it freezes the conflict in place. I mean, but it never gets to the final solution. So we had peacekeepers, and I visited with them on the Golan Heights between Syria and Lebanon. Well, we know how that went. There are peacekeepers in Cyprus from the days many, many years ago of fighting between Greek and Turkish Cypriots, and not ours. In essence, we're in a ceasefire. There are no peacekeepers there necessarily, but we're in a ceasefire in Korea, but with us in the North Korea, which has gone on. That ceasefire has gone on since 1953. So in terms of freezing a conflict in place and, you know, ending violence, peacekeepers have, you could argue, been successful. As far as that moving the process then to a longer-term solution and reestablishing some level of security for all the states involved, not so much.
Yeah, not to mention the cost that the peacekeeping mission,
right.
I mean, it's racking up dollar after dollar. I mean, it's like huge amounts of money.
Right, exactly. And then the question also is, is this peacekeeping force there under what auspices? Is it there on the United Nations auspices? Is it there under the Organization and Security Cooperation in Europe's auspices, as the group were back after the invasion of 2014? Or would it be there under a NATO auspices? Now, if they're under a NATO auspices, you could say there's a certain amount of deterrence involved in that force, because an attack on that force would be an attack on a NATO country, and therefore you could argue invoke Article 5 of the NATO Security Agreement for all the members then to respond.
So, I don't know about you, but I mean, if it were me, I try to put myself in the place of the negotiators. First thing I'd want to hear is, what concessions are the Russians going to make? I mean, obviously, what they're looking for is, in one of my texters here, and I think it's appropriately put, they just want an out and out surrender of the Ukrainians. I mean, if they're not willing to concede anything,
right?
I'm sorry.
I mean, the Trump administration, somebody said the other day, is seeking peace, and the Russians are seeking victory. So you have two different objectives here. And furthermore, I would say for the Russians, this is really part of a longer effort. Ultimately, what Mr. Putin wants to accomplish, which has been a goal for every Russian leader and every leader in the Soviet Union since the beginning of NATO, and that is to damage or destroy NATO, drive a wedge between the United States and its NATO allies. So in some ways, this effort in Ukraine and now getting into a bilateral negotiation with the United States over the heads of the Europeans and not involving them, and at the same time the United States talking about pulling forces out of Europe, this is every Russian leader's dream. One Russian journalist said the other day, this is like Christmas, Easter Sunday, and New Year's Eve all rolled up into one as far as the perspective of the Russians.
So what right now, because it seems to me that obviously I believe Donald Trump when he says the Russians want to get to some resolution, because I think they're kind of down and out in Beverly Hills right now, for lack of a better term. I just think that they're in a bad place. How bad is it? I mean, do we have any idea how bad the state of the state is for Russia?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more, and that makes the fact that we're making concessions to me a bit more puzzling, quite frankly. I mean, what have the Russians accomplished? Okay, well, they invaded and they thought they would take 3 days. In fact, officers were told to pack their dress uniforms 3 years ago because they'd need them for the victory parade in 3 days. Well, this is now going on 3 years. I hope that those officers, if they're still alive, are packing those uniforms around wherever they're going. They seized a significant amount of Ukrainian territory at the onset and at least their largest level of occupation in April of 2022. Since then, they actually have been pushed back to in a substantial fashion. They still control about 20% of Ukrainian territory, and they are making, I would call it, slow but steady progress, but at an enormous cost. Estimates now by British intelligence, Russians have suffered over 800,000 casualties, well over 100,000 dead, huge amounts of loss of military equipment, tanks, artillery, armored troop carriers, to the point that the Russians are now employing T-55 tanks on the battlefield in Ukraine. These were tanks that were constructed in the 1960s. Back at home, it's starting to have an effect upon the Russian economy. Inflation rates, we Americans are upset when inflation hits about 3%. Well, it's about 9 to 10% in Russia right now. Interest rates in Russia right now are 20% or higher, and those are all effects of the war. And furthermore, the Russians now have become totally dependent on external sources for a lot of their military hardware. Again, somebody suggested that perhaps as many as 60% of all the artillery rounds that are fired by the Russians are actually made in North Korea. So they're not in exactly the best shape right now. And Mr. Putin, I think, faces some dilemmas. If he can't bring this war to a ceasefire or to a close in the next few months, he's likely to be forced to demand a mobilization of manpower, because he's short so much manpower. And that would be very, very socially and politically unpopular back in Russia. So their situation is not that great, but it doesn't seem that we're making, to my mind, the best effort to capitalize on that, so far at least, in these negotiations.
I read somewhere someone put it this way. We may not necessarily have a conflict with Russia, but we almost certainly have a conflict with Putin. Do you believe that?
Yeah, I believe that's very true. Mr. Putin has staked, I think, his future. This is an existential problem for him. Again, he promised this is a special military technical operation. It's only going to last about 3 days, and here we are 3 years later and 800,000 casualties. The long-term I think, strategic effects on the Russian economy are enormous in terms of their ability to recover from it. But at the same time, it's not Mr. Putin personally one has to consider. It's this ruling class that he's established, the so-called Siloviki. These are the people that are around him. You know, a lot of people speculate, right, well, if Putin was to die, everything would be hunky-dory by tomorrow. And I say not so fast. There's a lot of guys around Putin who are every bit as extreme as he is. But for the average Russian, you know, we have no particular issue with them, except that their country is executing aggression against a neighbor.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, and I'm sure we'll revisit in the very near future as this thing continues to unwind. I'm not sure if we're going left, right, or straight at it. It seems to be a very meandering path right now, and a lot of distrust and lack of confidence on the part of a number of our European allies. Colonel Jeff McCausland, as always, we truly appreciate your time, your insight. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.